Good afternoon, and welcome along to today's podcast to mark the publication of our June 2020 Fraser Vallander Economic Commentary in partnership with Deloitte. My name is Graham Roy, Director of the Institute, and I'm delighted that joining me today is my colleague Mary Spouge, who will give us an overview of the commentary published tomorrow. We're also delighted that joining us is Steve Williams, Senior Partner for Deloitte in Scotland, who will give us his reflections on what businesses need to consider beyond the crisis. Now, as we're in lockdown, we thought we'd try something different this week and publish our reports over the course of the next few days. Earlier on today, we're delighted to have published an article by Caroline Gardner, Scotland's retiring Auditor General on policy in Scotland, and her reflections looking back on her time in post. On publication of the commentary tomorrow, we'll be publishing the findings of an exercise where we spoke to around about 15 economists, business leaders and anti-poverty campaigners to gain their insight into the outlook for the economy and their recommendations for different policy priorities. On Thursday, we have a couple of publications on the impact of COVID-19 on the Scottish budget and the outlook for SMEs in Scotland. We're also hosting a webinar on the UK's productivity puzzle as part of our new ESRC Propel Hub initiative with colleagues from the University of Nottingham. And on Friday, we'll be publishing a couple of articles on poverty and inequality in education in the COVID world. If this wasn't enough, we'll be putting online a series of podcasts through the week to discuss these outputs, including a great podcast we put on this morning with Callum Patterson, Managing Director of Scottish Equity Partners. Turning to tomorrow's report, it's hard to believe that it's just 3 months since our last commentary. Since then, we've had the greatest scaling back of economic activity in memory, an unprecedented fiscal stimulus, and millions of workers furloughed or working from home. Last week's figures confirmed that in April, GDP fell by almost 19% in Scotland and by over 20% in the UK. Now, what matters is the pace of recovery and the scale of the damage left behind as a consequence of this, albeit temporary, hibernation of economic activity. It means huge uncertainty, however, about the restart, not least because of the ongoing risks to public health, but also the concerns of the timing of the removal of government support. Now, sadly, it will only be when the government funding is lifted and the economy starts to restart that the full economic costs of the crisis will be realised. An immediate priority for many businesses is simply survival, but do expect a spike in closures and job losses as firms look ahead to the rolling back of support later on in the year. In this latest update, Mary will talk us through a range of scenarios, ranging from an optimistic scenario to a more pessimistic scenario where the recovery takes much longer to gain momentum, perhaps because of a second wave of infections. Now, all of them suggest it will take some time to make up the ground lost as a result of the lockdown. And as we've argued before, the Scottish economy has not had its challenges to seek in recent times, but there's also major opportunities coming down the line. And the COVID-19 crisis may have pushed them out of our view, but they've not gone away. And if anything, recent events have already added to the challenges, but also accentuated the opportunities that exist in the future. The last few months have highlighted the clear link between a strong economy and well-being. Expect this become ever clearer in the coming weeks as the full consequences of the economic crisis hit home. And one of the sad things that we know in crisis is that it's people who are the most disadvantaged who suffer the greatest and the harshest effects of any downturn and recession. So looking to the restart, we highlight four key factors in the commentary. Firstly, it's vitally important that we avoid a second wave of infections. The need for an effective testing and tracking regime at scale is an urgent necessity across the UK. The fact that this is not yet in place, is a concern. Secondly, government also needs to develop a more effective plan for the safe return of schools to let parents return to work. And this is exceptionally difficult. But the importance of getting that right is absolutely crucial, not just for the economy, but also to prevent widening inequalities. Thirdly, it's essential that governments across tiers get the right balance between the easing of their support measures and the lifting of restrictions. Now, all the survey evidence that we find and from our own conversations with individual businesses, many of them tell them they have relatively small amounts of reserves to get through the next few weeks. So lift the support too early and or delay easing restrictions too long, even by a matter of weeks, potentially create significant knock-on impacts across the economy that could be very severe. And finally, much will depend upon how consumers and businesses react to easing of restrictions. So the importance of a clarity of message to restore confidence, let businesses and consumers plan ahead, is vitally important. In time, practical support measures for the recovery, including around employability and skills, flexibility to change jobs, recapitalisation of corporate balance sheets and the like, will be important. The fact that all these different aspects of policy are controlled by the UK government, the Scottish government and local government means delivery is going to be a top priority and a challenge in here, because you're trying to coordinate activities across different levels of government. There's often a lot of the case in the midst of a crisis, we devote quite a lot of time to reimagining a better economy. And all sorts of ideas, really good ideas, are coming to the fore. But we cannot lose sight of the seriousness or the urgency of the situation now. This week's publication of the Economic Recovery Group's report for the Scottish Government aims to counter that and to add some insight and some value into that debate. And there was a lot of really interesting analysis and discussion and policy recommendations in the report. The report talks about resetting the relationship or building a constructive, positive partnership between business and government. It's got a really interesting idea, building on the Opportunities for All initiative in the past around job guarantee scheme for young people. It's got a new idea around the creation of a new workplace, transformation institute, and lots of potential suggestions for where government might go next. In many ways, some will see it as a bit of a missed opportunity in some aspects. So lots of ideas listed, but if we're being honest, there's a lot in the report that is similar to what we've seen before. And many of the recommendations would not really look out of place in the existing Scottish Government economic strategy. And in many ways, that's because our understanding of the Scottish economy and the challenges it presents are actually relatively well known, as are the solutions too. It's actually putting these solutions into action that is a much more difficult part. It's hard to disagree with recommendations that say we should prioritise digital, or skills, or employability, or the environment, infrastructure and the like. But there's perhaps less discussion about how. What areas must be cut back to fund new investment, and how are they going to be delivered? What happens if funding is less and able to provide all these broad ideas? And how do you create the institutional capacity in many of these new areas? For example, in creating an institution or an opportunity to invest at scale in companies and to have that balance between the public and the private sector over time. Listed away as well in reflection back to the government and past priorities or outcomes or advice about where they might want to scale back support or where areas maybe have not worked as well as they hoped to have done, and priorities might be better spent somewhere else. Some of the tricky issues around tax or budgets for economic development that businesses often raise weren't really discussed. And there's a lot of discussion about more, but obviously more has to be paid for. This isn't a criticism of the report's authors, more a challenge now to government to pick up the baton that the report has passed on to them to reflect on the recommendations and to actually turn them into action. Now, time will tell, of course, but hopefully this report is the first step in a process that will lead to an ambitious debate about Scotland and economic policy opportunities facing the country. Now, what I'd like to do now is to hand over to my colleague, Mary Spirridge, who will talk you through some of the detail of our economic analysis that we're publishing tomorrow. Over to you, Mary.
Yeah, so our commentary coming out tomorrow is a little different from our normal publications, in that we're very much focusing on what the latest indicators are telling us about the impact of the crisis. We've decided not to produce any forecasts for the Scottish economy and instead have built a number of illustrative scenarios looking at the ways that we think the current economic recovery could emerge and evolve over the next few years. So we obviously cover the impact on the global economy of the crisis, which has obviously been without precedent. And the impact has been different on different countries, depending on the scale of infection and the timing and nature of governments imposing lockdown measures or different restrictions on the way that their economy is operating. Interestingly, the view seems to be generally that the UK might be impacted more severely than other countries for a number of reasons. One of which is the high infection rate that was seen here in the UK. The other is around our kind of sectoral mix. It seems given our both our employment in affected sectors, but also the nature of that employment might mean that we are more exposed to long-term impacts in the UK from the crisis. In addition, there's obviously the challenges that are posed by the end of the transition period from our exit from the EU, which might lead to additional economic uncertainty and perhaps trade frictions in the future. So those are the reasons that generally it's felt that the UK might struggle a little bit more than other countries in recovering from the crisis. As Graham outlined, we found out recently that the UK economy contracted 20% in April, very similar to the Scottish figures that were published last week of 19%. And whilst these figures are without precedent, it's worth seeing that they are completely expected. Given the scale of the shutdown that has happened in the economy, we would have expected to see figures such as this. And so it's important not to overblow this because it is completely expected. And what we're likely to see over the next few months is unprecedented growth figures as large parts of the economy are opened up again and able to operate in the future. So if we look under the figures for Scotland, for example, there are obviously quite significant sectoral differences. And these are the sorts of sectors that we expected to struggle because they were most early ones that were shut down and also the most severely impacted. So this is those in tourism related sectors such as accommodation and food services, so pubs, restaurants, hotels. And also those in traditional retail, non-food traditional retail, who were forced to shut. So these are the sectors who are particularly badly affected in the data, as well as sectors such as transport and storage, which obviously have seen demand collapse significantly. So if we think about the outlook, we've got a few different scenarios that you'll see in our publication tomorrow. On the one hand, there's an optimistic view that if firms can survive the next few weeks, and all the data suggests that we are talking about a number of weeks here where firms could, you know, have the cash flow to survive. But if the restart of key sectors goes smoothly, then the recovery could build momentum fairly quickly. But that does, you know, assume that there's no second spike, obviously, in COVID-19 infections. So potentially economic activity could pick up quite quickly if demand returns. And whilst we wouldn't characterise this in any way as a so-called V-shaped recession where we see a complete bounce back, it might mean that by the time we get to the autumn that the outlook looks a bit more positive. And our scenario in this case estimates that the economy will get sort of back to pre-crisis levels by late 2021. On the other hand, if the virus continues to act as a drag on consumer confidence, the effects of the crisis could be more long-lasting. And we're calling this our sort of central scenario based on the current view of businesses and what might happen over the next few months as they begin to open up and perhaps are able to operate, but only operate at a lower level of capacity than they would normally be used to. In this scenario, we estimate that the economy will get back to pre-crisis levels, perhaps towards the end of 2022, maybe into early 2023. And this is in line with other models that have looked at this sort of slower recovery that might happen as a result of the restrictions that are likely to be in place over the next year or so. Of course, should there be a second wave and the introduction of more stringent restrictions, the hit to the economy will be all the greater. There'll be another dip in the economy as lockdown restrictions are reimposed and the long-term impacts are likely to be more severe and more long-lasting. And we estimate that this could be up to maybe mid-2024 before the economy recovers fully. It is worth remembering, though, that this is at the macro level, the overall economy, and it's likely that particular sectors are going to be hit particularly badly such as accommodation and food services, under each of these scenarios.
Great, thank you, Mary. And as I mentioned, we're delighted that Steve Williams, senior partner for Deloitte in Scotland, is joining us on this podcast. And Steve, if I can turn to you now. That's the really big picture and what's happening at a macro level within the economy. But I guess a lot of the businesses that you work with and even your own organisation are actually dealing with the consequences of all of this and having to respond in radical ways. And it'd be really interesting to get your reflections on what business needs to consider as it tries to look through the crisis and go from there.
Thanks, Graham. I think I'd probably start by having a few reflections on what's already occurred. And my observation from organisations and clients that I work with is that businesses have done quite an amazing job, actually, in adapting to the immediate environment. So getting thousands of people, if you like, out of the work environment, into the home environment. The IT infrastructure has been generally stable, it's been scalable and resilient. I think there have been issues around the health and well-being of employees and colleagues, and I'm sure that's a matter for reflection for many about how we manage that in the medium term going forward. But generally, leaders in business and in various other entities have done a remarkable job, I think. I do think, though, it's going to be pretty hard reversing it and moving our people back into a new environment. And I'm sure some of that will look and resemble the past, but some of it will look very, very different, as we'll come on to as we talk through the next few minutes. I think we need to start by looking at how leadership identifies the choices it now needs to make. I think it's really important that it's actually a time for reflection, actually, at a board level or at an executive level. I think in exploring, if you like, what the ambition and what the opportunities are for the business is really, really important. I think it'd be fair to say there's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, in a way, for businesses to look at its operating model, look at how it uses its colleagues and employees within the business and identifies various strategic opportunities for that business as well. All in the context, though, of the ambition for the business, but also in the context of the various recovery scenarios that are out there at the moment. So I'll come on to it again, but I don't think we should be discounting the possibility, as it's been mentioned earlier, of a second wave that comes through, and what that means and how businesses react to that scenario as well. After that period of reflection, there's a need to prioritize. So what do we kind of lock in and do, as we've done in the last few weeks and months? What do we invest in, and what does a business do? Do they dial down? And what are those priorities to take forward? And then some good old-fashioned great project management. So executing it brilliantly is what it's all about. So having a project plan, confirming accountabilities, and agreeing the next steps is clearly really important. We then have thought through, what are the and what does return to on-site working look like, and what are the next stages for businesses post-lockdown? Clearly, it's reopening and recovering the business in a way. We need to, as I said earlier, make sure that our planning also considers the risk of restrictions being reimposed should a second wave occur. And I'm always struck by my European colleagues, who are very much of the view that things will slowly improve. But if I talk to my colleagues over in the States, there's very much more mixed views there. Some of it, unfortunately, coloured by the politics of the United States, but also by their own experiences, and therefore they're of a view often that a second wave is inevitable, or at least a very bumpy next few months for their businesses. So I don't think we can at all assume that restrictions won't be reimposed. But perhaps on a more positive note, it's important to consider how businesses do reopen and the readiness for the future. Again, looking at the new ways of working, looking at the technological investments that need to be made, and looking for the opportunities for businesses to start to thrive again and take advantage of market opportunities. In terms of those considerations, I think we start by saying, well, what are and what is the risk appetite at this time? Some of the immediate conversations that businesses have had have been quite difficult with certain colleagues and employees. We can only see those getting greater and more difficult in some ways as companies, businesses, and governments assume that it is safe to return to work. Certain employees and colleagues might disagree and therefore not want to return to the business and working environment, certainly on site. And certain jobs will need to be undertaken on site, whether that's in a factory, a construction site, or in an office. So I think that's going to be an interesting area and potentially an area of some debate and friction in the future. And how you actually as a business manage the risk of infection for your employees versus the need to serve customers and generate revenue is clearly important. Associated with that is the more immediate issues of how do you actually get the on-site requirements met. So how do you actually clean the offices, make sure that that becomes part of business as usual, particularly when those offices are maintained by outsourced companies? How do you deal with potential tensions within the workforce? So for those which are working parents, do you just ask those who don't have children to come back to work? Do you just ask those without vulnerable relatives not to come back to work? How do you manage GDPR? So you'll be asking for more information about employees and where they've been. You'll be actually asking for their permission to have their temperatures checked. What if they do have a high temperature? How do you force employees not to come back onto the workforce? So it's a very sort of difficult, I think, immediate issues that will come through. And it will take a time, I think, for businesses to really work through that and to get their on-site requirements into a sensible place. I think at the same time, we need to work through, and businesses will need to work through, how they then ramp up slowly. So how do different teams return at different times? How do they get the connections between those teams to work effectively? How do you dovetail home working and working on site? And if employees return for furlough, how do you actually bring them back in? And can they be returned into the business in the same way? And so some very interesting and quite difficult choices, I'm sure, for leaders in that dehibernation, if you like, period to deal with. But perhaps in a more positive note, there's a quote from the New York Times which said, the coronavirus and its fallout, both economically and socially, is almost like a time machine for the future, and that changes that many of us predicted would happen over decades are instead taking place in the span of weeks. I think it's quite a profound statement that's come through. Because there are a number of matters here which a number of us felt were always going to occur, but there's no doubt those have been sped up dramatically in the last few days. There's no doubt that technology has been a glue that's connected organisations in a way that we didn't think possible, and that productivity actually in lots of ways has held up, in fact improved in certain businesses as well, and therefore we're not going to be returning to the same way of working as we did in the past. The workplace particularly, I think city centre offices will not look the same. The physical design of those will look very, very different. There'll be more like collaboration sites to meet with clients and suppliers and colleagues, rather than banks of desks. They'll be full of IT and technology, I hope, to allow collaboration to be undertaken in a better way. And therefore, I think they'll look and feel very different. And geographically, they might not be located any longer in city centres. Why would they be, and why would people want to risk public transport at this time? I think the workforce itself, I think we'll see an exacerbation of some of the variable and flexible working of the past. So crowdsourcing, I'm sure, will increase. The level of contractors and gig workers will also increase. And ecosystems of different talent will certainly be there and will be there in place as well, of full-time employment, I'm sure, in lots of industries. That obviously has advantages and potential social consequences, of course, as well. The workforce, I don't believe, and the options about how people are employed and the combination of skills that are needed will look very, very different. And then the work itself, we do think, and what we've seen around the last few weeks has been that employers value the outcome of work rather than perhaps the input and the days put into the work over time. Less focused on the tasks and processes, very much based on the outcome of work, and that's what's valued. We've also seen different types of work be valued more, and hopefully that will come through in the pay and remuneration of certain jobs as well. Often those have been more lowly paid jobs, so jobs in hospitals, obviously, but also bus drivers, other forms of public transport have been very valued for society. And I think the value of certain types of work will change dramatically as well in our society. And clearly technology, there's been a massive increase in the pace of technology and how it can be used and what's possible. And again, we can only see that increasing at a greater pace as necessity forces greater innovation in terms of how we use technology in the workplace. So certainly we see the acceleration of the changes to the future of work occurring. As restrictions are lifted, hopefully in the days, weeks and months ahead. So to summarise from us, great opportunities out there, great time for reflection, but some very difficult immediate colleague conversations we imagine coming through, with also the increased risk of litigation in that area as well. And very much from our side, the need to plan and to consider the risk of a second round of infection and what that might mean for the business and for colleagues as well. So, Graham, I'll hand back to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Stephen. It's really insightful to hear that, and that the balance between enormous challenges but also opportunities, and thinking about how the lessons can be learned from this to stand businesses in good stead for the future and the opportunities that we know are coming, and particularly for a place like Scotland with its skilled workforce, its attractive place to live, high quality companies, there's significant scope for when we do start to recover to actually look positively to the future. So can I just thank both Mary and Steve for joining me today. As we mentioned, the commentary is out tomorrow. There's lots of really interesting insights in it. I encourage you to read it. And as I mentioned, there's various other reports and articles coming out this week which offer some really interesting reflections on COVID-19. And just again, thank you to Deloitte for their ongoing support for the work that we do in the commentary and the Fraser Valley. As you hear from that discussion we had today, that partnership around the big economic context and what that means for businesses and what the opportunities are there is really valuable to us. So thank you very much, Mary and Steve, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.